Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Elizabeth Dutton.
Zarin Burnett.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
All right. Do you, just out of, you know, out of the blue, would you be able to tell me what is ridiculous?
Well, I have a question for you.
Oh, we're going to flip it right back around so quickly. Huh?
Do you like beverages with bite? Do you like a drink that has like a bite to it?
No, next question.
You don't?
I do. Yes, I like, yes. But I'm really suspicious of this.
You love sparkling water.
I do.
Sharp water.
Sharp water. We call it sharp water? Yes, I love that sharp water.
I can't take it most
water
of the time.
With teeth. That's what I like, Elizabeth.
Yeah, toothy water. And so also our...
Did they ruin water too?
They totally ruined water, oh, dude. Man. So we have been getting so many messages about this through all channels. Like mm-hmm. a pigeon flew in my window and it was tied to the leg. We got him some mashup. Okay. I'm so sorry. Are you surprised?
No, Elizabeth, I'm really not surprised
from
you.
This is probably, I think, one of the worst,
mm-hmm.
and it should be criminal,
mm-hmm.
and it involves 7-Eleven.
Okay.
And it involves...
You would think they'd be more involved in this, 7-Eleven.
Oh, in other mashups?
Yeah, you don't bring them up a lot.
Because they've been holding it, and now they just let it rip.
Oh.
They just, their tummies were
about
swollen.
About to let the spores go to seed, huh?
They just opened her up. So 7-Eleven got together with a company called Miracle Seltzer.
Okay.
And they're doing this line of sparkling waters specifically for 7-Eleven. It's the 7 Select from House of Miracles.
Sure.
So there are these flavors, lemon lime, green apple, sweet orange. You would totally gurp on those.
Oh, totally. All of my kinds of flavors.
Right. So then there's one that's called...
right.
One that's called hot dog.
What? Hot dog water?
Yeah. It's a twist on one of 7-Eleven's most beloved snacks, the Big Bite hot dog.
Oh, God.
The... Big Bite Hot Dog Sparkling Water combines the delicious and mouthwatering experience of 7-Eleven's iconic Big Bite Hot Dog into one refreshing beverage, ketchup and mustard included. Gone are the days of alternating bites of a hot dog with sips of a beverage. Now those on the go can swap the bun for bubbles.
So does it come with a nice float of grease, like from the rollers?
Should.
Because otherwise it's not authentic 7-Eleven
hot dog.
Listen,
man, Marissa Jarrett, she laid it down for us. She's an executive vice president.
Thanks, Marissa.
While crafting flavors like lemon lime and sweet orange came more easily, our journey took an unexpected turn with the creation of Big Bite Hot Dog Sparkling Water, a daring flavor that pushes the boundaries of flavor innovation. You know, the press release goes on and on, but let me tell you something. More details on the availability of this flavor will be revealed on April 1st.
Oh, yes, there we go.
There it is. I think that's part of it.
Yes.
But in the meantime, the rest of the lineup is available at 7-Eleven. So
hot
I think it's
water.
Totally fake. But yes. I was like, hot dog flavored water. Where have I heard that? And then I remembered that's the name of a Limp Bizkit album.
Hot dog water?
It's chocolate starfish and the
oh,
hot dog
right.
flavored water.
Yes, good pull.
So like I Google it, right?
Uh-huh.
And it said, you know how sometimes they have like people also ask and it tells you other Google searches. Uh-huh. And it said, what is the meaning of chocolate starfish in the hot dog flavored water?
Elizabeth, what is the meaning of chocolate starfish?
You click on it and it just says the human anus.
Dear God.
The first part of the title is a slang term for the human anus.
Yeah, I knew that part, unfortunately.
And then hot dog flavored water is an in-joke started by Wes Borland at a truck stop while the band was on tour, where Borland saw bottles of Crystal Geyser flavored water and made a joke about having meat or hot dog flavors. So
he was just ahead of the curve.
He was ahead of the curve,
and
they
blame
owe
him
royalties.
Yes. I blame you, Wes Borland.
That, friends, is ridiculous.
I'll give it to you on that.
You
one.
Should.
Yeah. You know what's also ridiculous?
No.
21 cubic feet of cash.
That is ridiculous.
Right? That's ridiculous, Elizabeth. One man stole 21 cubic feet of cash.
21 cubic feet. Okay.
And this brother got away with it.
Oh.
For a very long time.
Hmm.
This is his story. Dun dun. This is Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder free and 100% ridiculous.
Very.
Oh, Elizabeth.
Oh, Zarin.
Philip Johnson.
Yeah, sure.
Phil Johnson. My man Johnson.
Mm-hmm, Philly J.
Elizabeth, this story I'm about to lay on you is a Coen Brothers style story, but like the later movies, not the early goofy ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a... It's a crime story.
Okay.
This dude, Phil Johnson, right? He was a meticulous man. He was a smart man. He was a cynical man, Elizabeth. He was also an angry man. And he was a lonely man.
And a hungry man.
Very hungry. At the time of our story, Phil Johnson was 33 years old, mm-hmm. which you know what that means. He was in his Jesus year.
He was in his Jesus year.
And my man, Phil Johnson, was a major league screw-up.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. A former coworker, Larry Taylor, he said, and I quote, he'd show up for work late or not at all. Everything he did, he screwed up. One of his neighbors said that Phil Johnson, quote, just couldn't get anywhere in life. He was always talking about his disappointments and his job didn't pay good. It was always negative things. So,
see, now usually they talk to a neighbor and they're like, he was just the nicest fella.
Totally. Or else, like, you know, they were really bizarre. Now, his own sister said of her brother, Phil, that he, quote, lived in a world of pain.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Now, what was that world of pain? What was the job that he hated? And what was he so terrible at doing, Elizabeth?
I would love to know.
Any guesses?
No.
I'll just tell you. He was a courier for Loomis Fargo. They are like the armored car company, security for like Wells Fargo.
So was he just scared all the time? Is that why he didn't like
it? No. It wasn't so much that his job terrified him or such. It would be, basically, he was a guard for the armored car. And as a courier, what that means is he's the guy who goes into the business to get the cash. Now, he's making $7 an hour, and that was the pay he gets to risk his life for these cash deposits.
That's stupid.
So that was still depressing. This was 1997. So $7 an hour would be $13.50 in 2024 dollars.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a lot of risk for very little compensation.
Completely. Also, no health plan. No dental, no employer contributions to his pension. In fact, there was no pension, nada. There was just the $7 an hour.
He'd be better off as like a waiter somewhere.
Oh, completely. He worked his job for 10 years and he hated it.
Yeah.
Right? So for one, it was routine. Like it's just like literally he drove a route. So he picked up cash. He took it to a collection point. Same stops over and over again. Mind-numbing work, right? Mm-hmm. Phil Johnson, he let everyone know this, right? So all of his coworkers, they knew how much he hated the job that he shared with them. They knew how much he felt they were all paid too little and that how they should get benefits for risking their life for Circle K's cash drops, right?
Right.
Now, this job, it also gnawed away at his self-respect because he began to loathe not just the job, but his life. Like, soon enough, he loathed its effect on his self-esteem. Like, he told a friend, this dude, Tim Gray, that he'd likely never get married because what girl in her right mind would ever want a guy like him, right? Kind of sad.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. He is the captain of his own ship.
Totally.
So, you know, you can complain and complain and complain, but then sometimes you just got to do something.
It all comes down to perspective, too. Yeah. I mean, The $7 is not doing anything to decide who he is.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is a factor in his conditions that he's responding to, which right. he has a choice in how he responds.
Yep.
Okay, there was, though, in this nature-nurture debate, there was the nature part of it. He had a tough family situation, right? Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, this would probably fall mostly under nurture because we're not talking about, like, genetics being, like, genetic predispositions to disease. But anyway, my point is his parents split up when he was 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
His father cut out. He had an older sister and a brother, Sharon and David. Now, their mother, being a single mom, she's trying to do the best she can, Elizabeth. She goes on welfare. She moves her family into public housing in Atlanta, a rough neighborhood at the time.
Uh-huh.
His sister would recall how other kids would throw rocks at them as they rode their bikes. So
why?
Right? Just because they didn't like him, I guess. This is the 80s. You know, they always hear, you know, you hear about how rough things were in the 80s. Like, oh, we rode our bikes everywhere. What you don't hear is that some kids threw rocks at us.
For no reason.
So things continued to go bitter for young Phil. By the time he was 8 years old, the siblings were split up. Baby of the family, Phil, he went north with his mother. They relocated to a trailer park on the fringes of Rochester, New York.
Mm.
That didn't last long, though. Don't worry. Because he was given over to his in-laws, and there he worked for them in Pennsylvania.
Oh, God.
That also didn't last long, though, thank God, because he wound up in the West with his father, of all people.
Oh, yeah.
That also didn't last long. He was sent back by his dad. He packed up his boy on a bus and said, doing his best impression of, like, Bizarro World, Horace Greeley, he's like, go east, young man, go east. So,
like, I know that there are a lot of people in this world who have to face that kind of stuff, but on their behalf, I want to go on a slapping spree.
Oh, I know you do.
And just find these people.
Yeah, your hand will be red at the end of this one.
Do some whoopings.
Now, Phil Johnson, now that he's back in New York, he goes and he stays with an aunt. And the aunt was a kind, steadying force in his life. He finally has someone who's going to nurture this young boy. She pays for the kid, whose smarts has mostly been overlooked at this point, to go to a private religious school, Lima Christian Academy in Lima, New York, right?
Wow.
So finally, he's got, like, a good, stable situation. Phil Johnson, he stays with his aunt all the way through high school. He enjoys the first real period of stability in his entire life.
Wow.
Up to this point, though, the damage has been done, right? So he's basically a young hard case, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So one former teacher from his time at Lima Christian, they recalled that, quote, Phil had some problems. You know, he just didn't trust authority figures, especially male authority figures.
I wonder why.
Exactly. The same teacher also noted that Phil was, quote, very bright, sort of cynically critical. So, I relate to this cat. Like, I won't even lie. Like, by my high school years, I was also pretty distrusting of authority, especially male authority figures.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers would sense my skepticism, but I also knew that was no way to go through life, right?
Yeah.
So I did my damnedest not to not grow bitter. And I see how he crossed from skepticism into cynicism, and then with that comes the bitterness,
mm-hmm,
right? Which
mm-hmm.
is a poison pill.
Yeah.
So also, this was another factor. He was basically a proto-incel in that fact that he had no girls in his life, and he blamed a lot of his conditions for his unhappiness on the fact he had no women in his life.
Oh, right.
So that can make a man weird. I will be honest about that. The resentment of other young men for having mm-hmm. women and you not having them, like, they're mm-hmm. a possession, that, like, a natural component to a man's life.
Well, and a right.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, ignoring the woman's humanity and, like, agency, they're just like, I should have one. These other guys, so they're only thinking about it as a male competition. So becomes a way of, like, measuring manes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Really?
Now, anyway, Phil Johnson, he had a nickname. His buddies had called him Fish.
Okay.
Not like the beloved Barney Miller character.
Did he look like Abe Vigoda?
No. Oh. But this was based on his love of answering fish and bread whenever he was asked, what do you want to eat?
Fish and bread.
Fish and bread. Yeah. He was, like, on that loaves and fishes energy, right? He's just, like, out there. He seriously would have loved the all-you-can-eat fish and bread party that Jesus threw. He's like, this is the best thing ever. Just mowing down mackerel like it ain't no thing. Anyway, other than fish and bread, his other great love was the idea of being a cop.
Mm.
Like, when he was growing up, he really wanted to be Johnny Law, right?
Yeah, I'd love to have someone bitter on the force.
We got so many.
These women as subhuman, yes.
But even his high school teacher was like, I don't know, Phil. Let's look at some other career options. Mr. Ludeman from Lima Christian said, and I quote, we didn't think he was one of the guys we wanted out on the highway protecting us.
Yeah.
So there's
I second that. But, and I know very little about this.
So the vote of no confidence, this didn't dim Phil Johnson's hopes, not in his own eyes. So he goes off to Monroe Community College near Rochester, New York, pursued his dream with a passion. He gets an associate's degree in criminology.
Uh-huh.
Which, I'm not going to lie, Elizabeth, I kind of half want to go get one of those myself.
You probably should.
Right? Just for the kicks.
Why not? Take it online.
Yeah.
You know,
why not? Get myself a criminology
degree.
You're
here in California, and you know, you can a lot of places you can do at least 1 year for free at a California Community College.
Good point. Maybe I should look into this. Anyway,
I think you should.
Back to my man Phil Johnson.
Yeah.
After he graduated from Monroe Community College, he went south to Jacksonville,
Florida.
Yes.
Because there are North Carolina.
No, there are multiple Jacksonvilles, but the Jacksonville, you know, like
the big dog.
Yeah, the Miami, the Ohio State, the Jacksonville. So that's where his mother and big sister were living at the time, right? Mm-hmm. So before he dipped down to Jacksonville, he made a little pit stop in Venezuela.
That's a little roundabout way to get to Jacksonville.
You remember Lima Christian? He went there on a missionary trip.
Oh. Yeah.
So this is where he finally meets a girl, one who liked him back. A blonde missionary. She may have even assumed the position with him. I don't know. But I don't know for certain that what I do know is that there was a camp romance. Because when they got back home to America, she dumped him. So Phil Johnson starts his new life and his new career, and he pursues his passion for criminology, right? He goes, he's like in Jacksonville. He's like, I'm going to go become a cop. He tries in Jacksonville. No luck.
Mm-hmm.
He tries other cities and towns in Florida. Somehow still can't get hired, right? He's like, I don't know what's wrong with me, right? Now, honestly, I don't know what's wrong with him. Like, how can you not get hired as a cop in Florida?
Well,
it seems like the bar is pretty darn low.
Think about the red flags this dude is sending up.
Yes, I'm thinking the other cops.
You know, it's like because he walks in for an interview and he's like, so how easy is it to find a lady's address based on her license
plate? Do I get a full access to all addresses?
Hypothetically.
Just saying.
If I saw some broad walking down, like, okay, that's enough. Out you go.
Well, if you ask Phil Johnson, he'd tell you there were two reasons, just two reasons why he couldn't get a job as a cop. Can you guess what they are, Elizabeth?
Women?
No.
Oh.
I'll tell you. One was his back. It had a slight curve to it.
His neck? His back?
His back. Is, yes. No. And two, he was, quote, too male and pale. As in, he was much too much of a white male to get a job as a cop in the South.
Give me a...
I'm like, bro, come on. That's like, that's the first requirement, isn't it, to get a job as a cop?
I really, like, yeah, I'm just going to stop my whole tirade on that.
Anyway, what could he get a job as, Elizabeth? He could get a job doing vacuum cleaner demonstrator.
They still have that?
Back in the 90s, they did.
The 90s?
Yeah. Now, this wasn't like he was a salesman on the floor making a commission. No, no. He showed people at home goods conventions how you could, you know, clean up a spilled Legos with the new Suck-O-Matic 7000.
Right.
So, you know, but this whole time, though, he still longs to be a cop, right? So he gets a job as a security guard. He plans to stay there a while because one police department had noted that he had a spotty work history. He's just all over the place, right?
Right.
So he's like, I need to get a job and keep it. So he keeps this security job as long as he can, so he can show the cops that he can hold down a job.
That's why he did that for so long.
He ends up working there 10 years.
Right.
So, and that's why he hated it.
Yeah.
So that, and also the job sucked. So at this point, he feels his job is beneath him. He should be a cop, a detective, a CSI specialist.
Oh, sure, of
something,
course.
Right?
Of course. I know people like this.
Exactly. I know
you
do. I
know people who get criminal justice degrees.
Uh-huh.
And they think they're going to be CSI and like, yo! And,
get the sunglasses
and like
day one.
Dusting for prints and also somehow arresting people and also like, you know, cross-examining.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's not happening for them.
Yeah, no. And I know people who can't get jobs as cops with all that. And I know them and I know exactly why they're not getting jobs as cops. Thank bejesus.
Now that we know who Phil Johnson is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a little break, and then I'll tell you why Phil Johnson is the, not going to be the hero of this tale.
Why is Phil Johnson?
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Springtime is all about fresh air and fresh starts, and it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security. It's the only home security system I use and recommend. Here's why I love it. With the days getting longer and the weather warming up, we're out and about a lot more, and that applies to criminals too. I don't have to worry because SimpliSafe blankets my whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. And there are indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over my property day and night. It's not just cameras. SimpliSafe has professional monitoring agents who keep watch on your home when you aren't there. Agents can stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera, warning them that they're being recorded and the police are on their way. Sounds great, right? There's no contract, and they offer a 60-day money-back guarantee. So trying SimpliSafe is risk-free. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/ridiculouscrime. That's simplisafe.com/ridiculouscrime. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Elizabeth.
Zarin.
And we're back.
Yeah, hey, what's up?
So, I was thinking about it while on break. My man, Phil Johnson, and I use that term my man loosely, but what he should have done if he wanted to become a cop.
Yeah.
Go to the military.
Yeah.
That's the route. Most cops are ex-military, right? So you go to the military, you qualify yourself in these certain components of like, I can listen to orders, I can fire a gun, I can like, you know, not shoot the wrong person most of the time, right? They're like, okay, you can be a cop.
He 100% has dishonorable discharge written all over him.
Probably.
Yeah.
So anyway, most of Phil's coworkers at the armored truck company where he got a job, they were ex-military.
Yeah.
So they would kind of lord that over him. Anyway, as he marked his time as a security guard, still dreaming of one day becoming a cop, he would drive around in his armored truck listening to Rush Limbaugh's talk radio show on the old AM radio dial, getting radicalized. And a friend of his from that time said he noticed how all the Rush Limbaugh was making Phil Johnson even more negative. And I quote, "To him, everything was a catch-22. I didn't want to be around him sometimes because he was so negative. I'm sorry, but I can only take so much."
I'm with him.
Now, by this point, we're 10 years deep in his quest to be a cop, right? He's getting frustrated, getting radicalized. Phil Johnson is telling that same friend who I just quoted that he had so little to show for his life, he might as well end it, right? He's getting despondent. It got so bad, his mother and sister looked into checking him into a mental hospital, but without any health insurance to cover it, that was not an option. The hospital wouldn't even admit him. So one neighbor...
See, that's just terrible, but also now you're worried about his mental health?
Well,
his family?
I think that they finally had signs that were irrefutable.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
So...
I'll allow it.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your latitude on that. There was a neighbor, June Glover, an older lass, who was friendly with him. She recalled how Phil Johnson had asked, well, she'd asked him, rather, if when he was complaining about his life, if he'd ever considered going to church, maybe, you know, turning to prayer, give it up to God, right? And Phil Johnson told her he couldn't do that because, as he said, and I quote, "I'm mad at God."
He's mad at God.
He's mad at God. So
well, go talk to him. Get this settled out. Get it ironed out.
So what would Phil Johnson do now that he's mad at God, despondent with life, wants to be a cop, can't get a shot? Well, he decided, you know, I guess I could always go the other way.
Yep.
So he worked out a plan. He studied how he could get away with this idea. He was meticulous, as I said, in the details of logistics. He worked out his plan to the tiniest consideration. And one day, one day before Easter, in fact, he decided it was time to strike. It was time to become the guy the cops were looking for.
We gotta roll back the stone.
Yeah, now who wants to find old Phil Johnson?
I have to say, this doesn't include our 1%, correct? Uh-huh. Which is shocking to
me. No, there's no 1% in this.
This guy has everything written all over him. Of it. He's going to kill somebody.
Yeah, no, not this guy. He's too pathetic to kill.
Oh,
no,
God.
I mean, like, anyway. So this was March 29th, 1997. We just passed the anniversary, Elizabeth.
Yeah, we did.
You notice that It was a good day in 1997. It was in the spring. So Phil, he drove.
He didn't have to use his AK.
Exactly. Today, mom didn't make a breakfast with no hog.
It was a good day.
So Phil drove his busted VW Rabbit to work. He showed up his normal shift. And on his normal shift, I told you, he was a courier.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Now, Elizabeth, are you familiar? Because if you're unfamiliar with the industry jargon, I'm just throwing around.
Yeah,
the
no, go
courier,
ahead.
That's the security guard who hops out of the armored car, and they go into the business alone, but armed, and then they collect the heavy canvas bag of cash.
Yeah.
They guard it as they securely transport it back to the armored truck. Inside the armored truck is where the doors, they have to remain locked, and this is all policy, by the way.
Yeah, so he's like the runner.
He's like the
out.
Runner, but they call him the courier, right?
Okay.
And then inside, there's the driver.
Right.
And then if there was another guy, then maybe he'd be the shotgun.
Okay.
Right? So the guards of the truck, they have gun ports that they are allowed to shove the barrel out of, and then they can fire at the bad guys. But
it's like so 30s.
Totally.
I love it.
But they're not allowed to open the doors. So if he's out there getting robbed, they're just,
yeah.
they can just watch or like possibly
or
take
shoot
shots.
Everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see why he's like really did not like his job. He's just
yeah.
basically expendable for $7 an hour.
Yeah.
But he was given a bulletproof vest, and I know how much you love those. And also a .38 pistol, right?
That's
and
something I mentioned on the Daily Zeitgeist.
Yes, you
but
did.
I think that bulletproof vests are overrated
yeah.
because a headshot usually kills you right away.
Pretty much.
So how's that going to help me?
Not much.
Right. So you were saying...
But a lot of people know to shoot for center mass because it's an easier target than a person's head. So.
Right. But you were saying... I said you should have like a bulletproof balaclava.
Yeah.
You were saying you want like a Cobra Commander
like
cowl.
Like full-on cowl mask. Yeah. I want draping. I want like...
I want a Kevlar bubble. I'll just roll down the street. So anyway, continue.
Like a fishbowl? Like just
yeah.
like round and perfectly...
Like a Jake Gyllenhaal boy in the bubble.
Uh-huh. Like a
DACA
like diving
I got
bell?
Bad allergies. I'm allergic to
oh,
weapons.
A full bubble surrounding
oh, yeah,
you.
No, I'm allergic
not
to
your head.
Bullets.
I got you.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally see you
you
in
can
that.
Totally see that, couldn't you?
So after completing their regular route, Phil Johnson's armored truck, they would then return to the Loomis Fargo warehouse to drop off all the collected cash. Then they would get cleared by a guard to enter the lot because the whole lot is secured, right? Then the garage door gets open. The armored truck pulls inside. Very 1930s, as you pointed out.
Yeah. Love it.
Now, as soon as the armored truck is parked, the driver, he's done for his day. He can clock out. He's done this whole thing, right?
That's but, also very 30s.
Yeah, you're out, man. But Phil Johnson, he has to stay behind and process the load, and then he'd be done.
Is that what that's a euphemism?
You got to process the load, bro. This is a dude, this is some load management.
Goes in the bathroom for a while.
So this was by the way, on this night, well, he was the last truck to return to the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
So at night, it's about 7 p.m. Phil Johnson is alone, which is two vault guards who are left working inside the warehouse because they also have to clear the load with him.
Yeah.
So their names, by the way, are Dan Smith and James Brown. Yes, the Godfather of Soul was working
that
night.
He was there.
Truly
wow.
the hardest working man in show business.
No,
different James Brown. But at 7 p.m.
Darn.
Or so, this James Brown, Dan Smith, and Phil Johnson, they are in the warehouse, right? And
these are like the most generic names,
totally.
By the way.
I mean, they're just like AI generic names.
Totally.
But not even AI, because AI would mess it up.
It totally.
So Phil Johnson, he draws his .38 on his fellow guards. They're like, hey, that's not funny, man. Don't point that at me. And he's like, no, man, I got the drop on you. They're like, yeah, you got the drop on me. He's like, no, I got the drop on you.
No, you'll never become a cop acting like that.
So he's like, yeah, toss your weapons over here.
Oh, God.
So then they do. And then he's like, okay, now handcuff yourself to the floor. Because apparently the floor had like metal rings or something to it. So they were like,
that's convenient. Why are you handcuffing yourself?
So Dan Smith, he was the younger man, Elizabeth. He was about 27. James Brown, he was an old vet of the game. He was 52. These two men weren't expecting to be robbed, right? So, but they were, like, as I told you, they're basically handling paperwork on this last load of the night. They're, like, almost about to get home. Now they're getting handcuffed and shackled to the floor. So they're like, oh,
yeah.
It's a Friday night, man. So Phil Johnson, he walks out of the yard. He grabs a white Ford Econoline van, backs it up to the loading dock for the vault area. And then this is, picture just your standard stretch white van. Nothing special
sure.
about it. Like
sure.
something a church group would use, right?
Yeah.
Phil Johnson, he loads heavy canvas cash bags. Like these bags are, they're stuffed full with bills, right? None of the bills are smaller than a $10 bill.
Oh.
And he loads the canvas cash bags into the back of the van. For 2 hours, he loads cash bags by himself. Two solid
hours
just tossing bags.
Wow.
The money, by the way, was perfect for a heist because it was all from convenience stores, gas stations, liquor stores, fast food joints, grocery stores.
riddled with bacteria.
What you have other than the bacteria is unmarked, non-sequential bills.
Yeah, exactly.
And a ton of them collected from businesses. It's impossible to track this cash.
Yeah.
So the van is now loaded with millions in cash. Phil Johnson, he walks over to the surveillance security system. He removes the videotapes, recording the security cam footage. Then he went and pulls his personnel file, took it with him. Lastly, he locked the vault and set it to, so it wouldn't be open until Sunday afternoon, thanks to the time lock. Then he goes back, he unshackled James Brown and Dan Smith.
James Brown smooths his pressed hair.
He's like, my palm is conked. So he told them to hop in the van, lie down on top of the bags of money, and do as instructed, or he would ventilate them, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it to you, see, with my heater. So Phil Johnson, he starts the van up. He calmly drives out of the secured warehouse. He drives with the $18.8 million he's managed.
And he locks them in another van.
No, they're in the van.
They're in his van?
In the van with him, just lying
Why?
On the cash. Yeah.
Why?
He's got a plan, Elizabeth.
Okay.
Now, this $18.8 million, if in 2024 dollars, double it. It would be $36.3
million. Wow.
Yeah. Phil Johnson, he's got his $36 million, basically. It's $18.8. But anyway, mm-hmm. where do you think he went with his loot and his two coworkers that you questioned him bringing along?
I don't know. The waterfront?
No, he went home. He drove to his place.
Goes to his house.
He went back to his house.
Okay.
He had a three-bedroom house, a nice little Tony joint, about a mile away from the warehouse. By 9 p.m., he pulls into his place. He's like, oh, sorry for the mess, guys. He took James Brown out of the van. He let him inside the house. And then none of his neighbors saw the two men go inside, apparently. But once inside, Phil Johnson, he handcuffs the old vet, James Brown, to a metal pipe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now that James Brown is sitting there, and this is a pipe that is running through a closet. He's like in a closet, and he's like attached to like one of the big metal, like, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So he leaves him some snacks and a 2-gallon jug of water, you know, for his blood sugar. He's an older guy. Thoughtful, I thought.
Yeah.
Then Phil Johnson, he climbs back into the white Ford Econoline van, and he lays a blanket over Dan Smith, and he's like, we're going to roll. And he fired that bad boy back to life, and he drove Dan Smith and the stolen millions away, right?
Come on, cuddle buddy.
They drove all through the night, Elizabeth. He's like humming songs to him, like, sing along, Dan! So, and he tells Dan Smith, if you try to get away, if you try to do anything stupid, I am prepared to kill you. Okay, now where are we? What song do you want to sing, right?
99 bottles.
So eventually he has to pull the van over. I don't know if it's for a bio break or for gas or whatever. He tells Dan to lay there covered by the blanket, handcuffed, mind you, to the van.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted to see, like, you know, do you want to live to see the next day? Then just be cool, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Dan Smith is like, I want to see tomorrow. So he acts cool. Phil Johnson, meanwhile, unloads the cash into some unseen secure location because Dan Smith's covered with a heavy blanket.
Oh, right.
Phil Johnson gets back in the van, drives off again. They drive for 4 hours. Dan Smith has no idea what direction where they're going,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Then suddenly, actually, what he doesn't know is he's missing out on a great drive because they were on the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Oh, beautiful.
Really nice. It would have been better if it was the autumn, but it was the spring. Anyway,
right.
still a beautiful drive.
Lovely.
So this is also, by the way, now Easter Sunday because the days have passed.
And if it was me, I'd be car sick. I get car sick so easily.
Yeah, you do. So the van pulls over the backwoods outside Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Phil Johnson uncuffed Dan, and he's like, since you're not going to sing, get out, right?
Yeah. He's so like, find a cute coffee shop.
Something that we can do somewhere we can take photos. So he orders him out of the van, right? He handcuffs him to a tree. Then he leaves him some snacks and another jug of water.
Oh.
Once again, very thoughtful. He tells Dan Smith, hey, look, man, I'll tell you the cops where to find you. Just wait 48 hours and then they'll come out and get you, right? Now, if Elizabeth, I was curious about this when I was doing the research on this. If a coworker abducted you, drove you out to the woods in North Carolina, handcuffed you to a tree that said, trust me, I'm going to alert the cops, would you believe them?
No.
Okay.
No.
Dan Smith was our kind of guy because, Elizabeth, do you know what he had in his pocket?
Oh, what did he have in his pocket?
No, he wasn't happy to see you. A Swiss Army knife.
Oh, well done.
And he used it to pick the handcuffs, and he freed himself within an hour.
Good for him.
Yeah, then he walked out of the woods.
This is why you got to always carry it.
You know I do.
I know you do.
He flagged down a passing motorist, asked for a ride to the closest authorities. He was given a ride to the U.S. Forest Service Station because that was the closest authorities.
Close enough.
They're like, how about a park ranger?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's good enough.
They got
whatever.
Uniforms. Let's go.
They got a badge. Yeah. So meanwhile, my man, Phil Johnson, he's initiating the second part of his plan, getting away with it.
Uh-huh.
So back in Jacksonville, it's Sunday morning. The morning shift at Loomis Fargo has arrived for work and discovered the vault was locked. The supervisor phoned the police. Cops arrived. They asked to see the security camera footage from the night before. Supervisor took them to the surveillance room where they discovered there are no tapes of the night before.
Oh,
things
man.
Looked rough for the investigating officers. But this is when the Jacksonville police received a call from the cops in North Carolina. They had this guy who had gone to the park service and now they got into all the way to the police. They told him, the Jacksonville cops, that is, what Dan Smith had told them. Together with the FBI, the Jacksonville PD raced over to Phil Johnson's house. They raid the house, and what do they find?
No James Brown in a closet.
Exactly. They find James Brown in a closet. No Phil Johnson, though. So the FBI field agents, they search the whole home. They discover all sorts of clues. There was paperwork that showed Phil Johnson had definitely secured fake identities. There were some tourist books that indicated he may have cut out for Brazil. It was like, Brazil on $5 an hour a day. So all in all, the investigators find that Phil Johnson had been planning his heist for 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so it took him 5 years of being a security guard before he's like, forget all this. I'm going to go become a lawless outlaw.
Yeah.
So they also found that Phil Johnson had painted a personal mantra on the walls of one of his homes.
Oh, no.
He painted three words, Elizabeth. House of Pain.
Jump around.
I don't think he was like a super fan
jump
of the
up,
band.
Jump up and get down.
Exactly. I think he said, look, y'all, I came to get down. I came to get down. So get out of your seat and jump around, right? It's because
Jump.
His house of pain that he had
word
dubbed
to your
it.
Mom. I came to drop bombs.
I know that about you.
I know, right?
So now that the FBI has their main suspect, the Everlast number one fan, the FBI launches a nationwide manhunt. But what was Phil Johnson up to?
He was in the wind.
Well, he ditched the white Ford Econoline van. Good call.
Yeah, I'm interested to find out what that stop was.
Oh, where yeah. What's where he dumped off the money?
Yeah, where is that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we do know that he dumped the Ford Econoline van at the National Guard Armory parking lot. That would take a while to notice. Kind of smart.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, the FBI checked the transportation records of all the various airports, bus stations, train stations, and they found evidence that suspected Phil Johnson, using one of his fake identities, had bought a Greyhound ticket to Mexico and most likely fled the country.
Oh, man, a Greyhound to Mexico.
But at this point, he has a 5-year head start in terms of planning.
Right.
He's been underestimated his entire life.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's showed the law enforcement community what they've been missing out on. So, and he's got the $18.8 million to fuel his revenge tour.
Well, there's that, too. Yeah.
Phil Johnson had done it. Ripped off his employer. Successfully gotten away with it. Gone on the lam. He was laying low and staying there. For months.
Wow.
The FBI had no solid leads. Jacksonville PD had even fewer. Finally, on July 26, 1997, the Washington Post published a story with the headline, and I quote, "Have you seen this man? He's 33, single, lonely, grouchy, rumpled, and very possibly the richest thief who ever lived."
Oh, God.
Get him, Washington Post.
It's like an old-style newspaper. He's homely.
Yeah, exactly. Grouchy, rumpled. I mean, he could use an iron, is what I'm saying.
They're trying to poke the bear. They're trying to get him all upset.
That's what I'm thinking. Loomis Fargo, meanwhile, is furious. The company has offered $500,000 for any information that would lead to Phil Johnson's whereabouts or his arrest. Mm-hmm. No one's coming forward. Mike Hurd, the FBI field agent in charge of the manhunt, said, and I quote, "He looks like anybody. So go find him and we'll give you $500,000. Like, we got nothing, y'all.
Yeah.
But the trouble for the FBI was that they had their hands full with a far more high-profile perp at the time, the killer Andrew Kananen.
Yeah, 97. I'm trying to think of, like,
he was
okay.
on his cross-country killing spree at this point. The FBI was very much focused on capturing him.
And headed
him.
To Florida.
Exactly.
Oof.
There was another factor that also made it difficult to capture Phil Johnson. He was wholly unremarkable looking. He was a nondescript white guy. His blonde hair was his most distinguishing feature, and blonde hair can easily be dyed.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So effectively, his plainness made him invisible.
Yeah.
It was finally working out for him, Elizabeth.
What month is this?
At this point, April.
April, okay.
So, and his old friends, they were shocked to learn what he'd been up to lately.
Yeah.
His friend Tim Gray was at a funeral when
another
he heard...
Another generic name.
Yeah, about his what his old buddy Phil Johnson had done. And somebody told him, "Did you hear Phil Johnson gave himself a raise?" Such Southern humor. Now, you know who's also impressed? The Guinness Book of World Records. Mark Young, the editor of the U.S. edition of the Guinness Book of World Records, when he heard that Phil Johnson, what he had done, he said, and I quote, "Damned impressive, actually. 20 million? And he's still out there? Woo!"
Oh, he's rounding up on him,
too. Yeah, totally. Giving him, you'd think he'd be better on the stats, right?
Right? Right?
But he was so impressed because, as Young well knows, Phil Johnson had obliterated the old record for the most money ever stolen in a heist. The previous record was $11 million stolen from an armored car vault in New York City. Huh. Now, around the world, the record was a disputed amount because it was somewhere between $20 and $50 million.
Yeah,
I don't know. Ballpark. Which was stolen from the vaults and safe deposit boxes of the British Bank of the Middle East in Beirut.
Oh.
But that wasn't one man. That was a whole heist team.
Yeah.
And they'd used bombs. Oh. So, you know, Phil Johnson, he just used routine and cleverness to rip off 18.8.
Yeah.
Solid, indisputable.
Right.
Now, do you know how much money that is? I mean, physically?
Well, what were you saying? Something about cubic feet?
Yes, 21 cubic feet.
Golly,
so
that's a lot.
Moving that much cash would be an insane workout. The Mike Hurd, the FBI agent, he estimated that the amount Phil Johnson stole, as he said, and I quote, "I'm told the dimensions are roughly 21 cubic feet. That's a heck of a lot of money."
Yeah, that is a heck of a lot of money.
You said it, Mike Hurd.
Yeah.
Now, if you took those big duffel bags that you like that can hold a dead body,
yes, I love
21
those.
Cubic feet of cash would fill about six of those duffel bags.
Okay.
That's how much we're talking.
Wow.
If you tried to deposit the money at a different bank in order not to raise suspicions,
yeah,
you'd have to stay under like that $10,000 mark.
Yeah.
So the bank wouldn't report it.
Yeah.
That means you'd have to go to 1,880 banks before you'd be good.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah.
You could wash the money, but you'd have to trust someone.
I was going
to
say.
Right? You could hide it. You could bury it, wrap it up, paint it like a fake boulder, you know, whatever. But
yeah,
I don't recommend burying money because it will rot in
yeah
the ground. And, it,
yeah,
and if you leave it sitting somewhere, rats will sometimes eat it. Ask mm-hmm my man Pablo Escobar about
mm-hmm
that. So what's a self-respecting mastermind to do with your 21 feet, cubic feet, mind you, of cash?
I don't know.
Well, after this break, Elizabeth, I will tell you.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, Elizabeth.
Goodness.
We're Burke.
We're Burke.
We're Burke. So now that we're back, my dude Phil Johnson, right? His sister provided some insight as to what kind of guy they were dealing with, right? Because yeah. FBI is like investigating everybody, they're talking to everybody. And he was like, to her, he was very clearly more of an outlaw folk hero than anybody else would have thought, right? Mm-hmm. She said, and I quote, if Philip even has the money, if he hasn't buried it somewhere, he'll probably just give it away, find an orphanage or something in South America and just give it to them.
I haven't seen any evidence of that. But you know what? That's his sister. She knows best.
That's what I was going to say. You would think that that from the read you have, right? Yeah. But remember, the bitterness was an acquired quality of his. Before the bitterness, inside the onion layers of his soul, there is a kind-hearted kid in there, right?
Yeah.
And so she also hinted at the sister at what his motivations were for stealing the money, other than proving that the cops should have hired him. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. that's job number one, right? Yeah. But other than that, his sister said Phil Johnson wanted revenge.
Yeah.
In other words, he was still mad at God. So
this is revenge on God. That'll get him.
Attack and dethrone God. That's job number two, right? So Sharon said, and I quote, really, that's what this is all about, payback, to show the world what morons Wells Fargo is, because Philip never cared about the money, right? So she's like, he wants to get back at his boss, to get the cops, to God. He doesn't care about the money.
Yeah.
His old high school buddy, this dude named Schaefer, he noted that you could trace a straight line back to Phil Johnson's old Subaru.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. He's like, when he was a boo owner.
He had a Subi.
So they were in a high school and his old Subaru was, as Schaefer put it, quote, so roached it was a wonder they let him drive it. But he loved it because it was beat. So, right, a little insight there. Now, Phil Johnson, was he still getting even with life? Because he didn't really do it for the money, apparently.
Well, I'm sure that people made him feel like he wasn't smart.
Yes.
And so either because he couldn't get these jobs or at work, it's probably so, like, not intellectually challenging. Mm-hmm. So he's showing, like, you know, I can outsmart all of you.
Completely.
You're morons. You're the morons, not me.
You too, God.
Yeah, and you, God. And God's like, let us wait and see.
I think the amount that he picked up was to get attention. He goes, clearly, I think he wanted it to be a big score, so that way he would, you know, get into Guinness Book of World Records or whatever, which he most certainly got. So back to the question at hand, what would he do with the stolen Lucci? As his pal, high school pal Schaefer, suggested, quote, has he just taken enough to live on and ditch the rest? I wouldn't put it past him to sit there and burn $20 million and keep one of it as a spite thing.
Oh, interesting.
All the people close to him suggest he doesn't give a feather or a fig about this, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, Phil Johnson, son of the House of Pain, right? What is he up to? This outlaw folk hero of the busted and beat. Where is he, Elizabeth? And what is he doing with all the stolen cash? You think?
Did he make it to Mexico?
He was indeed in Mexico.
Good for him,
I guess. Made it out of the country. He deposited some of the money in Mexican banks. Mm-hmm. Not 1,800 of them, but some of the money. He floated around. He played the happy gringo. Once again, nondescript, forgettable, blends in with all the other, like, you know, jerks down there embarrassing themselves.
To have six giant duffel bags with him.
Exactly. Six body bags of cash. Meanwhile, the FBI is scouring the North Carolina woods, right? Just looking for a clue. The white Ford Econoline van eventually gets called in. The FBI investigates that vehicle. It offers very little in evidence or clues. Like I said, dude was meticulous. They got nothing, not even a hair out of it, right? So the FBI, they track, though, a series of suspicious bus tickets. They believe that Phil Johnson bought a Greyhound ticket to Atlanta. Then he bought a ticket to Brownsville, Texas. And at the border town, he bought another bus ticket into Mexico. And agents eventually found evidence that supported this theory. They found proof that Phil Johnson had spent some nights in Mexico. But after that, trail went cold. Nada. Boom. Right. So they're like, what are we going to do with this guy? Now, Loomis Fargo, the security company, they had their own team to investigate. So they said, you go down and find Phil Johnson. Right. Yeah. The FBI, meanwhile, they turned up a phone call to a local Asheville, North Carolina TV station that had alerted the news department where there was a man handcuffed in the woods. So he was good to his word.
Oh, he told the news.
Yeah. And the FBI tried to trace the call. And back to my man, Mike Hurd, the lead FBI field agent, he said, we don't know.
What?
Yeah. He made some noise about Ma Bell because it was very much like coming out of the breakup of the Bell phone company. So he's like, yeah, with Ma Bell, there's just so many phone companies. I mean, can you tell me how many phone companies there are?
Well, give me a break.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, FBI. Anyway, the FBI, they turned to USA Today, right? And they took out a full-page ad. So they ask him.
So people in hotels across the country.
Exactly. Put down your croissant and your medium coffee and tell me, have you seen this man? He's surly. He's ornery. He's rumpled. So grouchy. No,
and he looks like everybody.
They start asking for information leading to the arrest of Phil Johnson. They get nothing, right? Still, they spent months of digging. They have very few leads. They have found one thing that will help them. Phil Johnson's fake identities.
Mm.
They found the paperwork. They connected the dots on that. They found that one of the fake identities was in the name of his half-brother. Another was in the name of a high school friend. And another was an old roommate.
So if he knows he's going to have to skip out, why leave any evidence in the house?
I don't know. I was surprised by that, too. He's meticulous about everything, but he leaves behind that. I was surprised by that, to be quite honest with
you. Like, go do a burn pit in a neighbor's yard or
exactly, right? Just be regularly burning leaves. So the FBI struggled to get the public to care about this problem, right? So now we got this outlaw folk hero who's not really a folk hero because nobody cares about him.
Right.
So Phil Johnson still is overlooked and ignored. So meanwhile, there's a guy who worked at the local Jacksonville radio station, this guy Al Wells. He writes a folk hero ballad for Phil Johnson.
Oh, good. It's like a morning zoo type ballad.
Totally.
Oh, boy.
But even he noted how forgettable Phil Johnson was. And he said, and I quote, "What's really hurt the guy in terms of turning into a PR coup, another D.B. Cooper, is his name so dull. Philip Johnson? Even I can't remember it." So there's your songwriter dissing you.
Wow.
So months are now passing. The now international manhunt has produced nada, bubkis, zilch, right? It's almost as if that was the problem. Because Phil Johnson, he'd always wanted to rub his outlaw success in the face of the law enforcement community who rejected him. And he couldn't even do that because they were like, oh, we're going to stop looking for this guy.
Whatever.
He got $18.8 million. But eventually he did something about it. Eventually he got their attention again. Or at least that's how it seems to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was intentional, but it sure seems like it, right? My point is, Elizabeth, I'd like you to close your eyes.
My eyes are closed.
And I'd like you to picture it. It's August 30th, 1997. And Elizabeth, you are in Brownsville, Texas. I don't need to tell you, but it's been a hot one. So you are down there at the U.S.-Mexico border crossing, across the river from Matamoros, Mexico, and you're working at the border. That's right, you are a U.S. Customs agent. It's already been a long day, a hot day, and you can hear the air conditioning as it hums above the soft din of waiting border crossers. But you don't really feel that air conditioning. All around you, families and laborers mixed with salespeople and business commuters. Most of all of them are Mexicans or Americans returning home. You are, in fact, the supervisor for this border station. And at the moment, you walk among your border agents, stopping momentarily at each agent's kiosk to observe how they greet and process the incoming travelers. You see a youngish American man step up to a border guard's kiosk just as you settle in to observe the agent's demeanor and professionalism. You run a tight ship, Elizabeth, and have high expectation for your agents. You note that this agent asks by rote, with a flat, affected delivery, the first question: what was the purpose of your visit to Mexico? The agent you're observing is named Virginia Rodriguez. She's processing the intake for a line of travelers, most of whom just stepped off of an American inbound bus. While she may be going through the motions, you're pleased to see that Agent Rodriguez's attention snaps to a sharp focus as soon as the agent detects that the youngish man standing before her is particularly nervous. When he was asked what the purpose was of his visit to Mexico, he paused for a moment, Elizabeth. A long moment, one you noticed, and then he said, to visit friends? That caught your attention, and it piqued Agent Rodriguez's suspicions. She repeats his answer back to him. To visit friends? The youngish man replies, yeah, that's it, yeah, to visit friends. You have to stifle a laugh at this man's poor impression of John Lovett's pathological liar character from SNL back in the day. Meanwhile, Agent Rodriguez hones in on the truth. She asks to see proof of the man's identity, a driver's license, a passport. The youngish man pulls out a North Carolina driver's license. You hear Agent Rodriguez pronounce the name on the license. Roger Lauder. That's your name, sir? The man answers in the affirmative. You watch over Agent Rodriguez's shoulder as she types in the name Roger Lauder into her computer terminal. The cursor on the green and black screen flashes as the computer retrieves information. And then boom, up flashes a warning. The name Roger Lauder is a known alias for the suspect who robbed the Loomis Fargo warehouse in Jacksonville, Florida. Agent Rodriguez spins coolly around, looks at you, her supervisor. You give her that steely look and a pert smile. Then you turn your attention to two waiting border security guards. You give the signal to the armed border guards. The two guards move quickly, professionally. They approach from either side of the young man. Then he sees your attention has shifted. He spins around on his heels in time to see the two border guards just as they march up on him. They grab by the arms. Sir, if you'll come with us. You give a quick congratulations to Agent Rodriguez for her astute eye for a suspicious traveler. Then you follow the sound of the two armed border security guards' boots as they lead the young suspect into an unmarked back room for further questioning. And boom, just like that, Philip Johnson was caught.
Nice.
Congratulations. You and your team busted Phil
Thank
Johnson, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much.
The man with the single largest armored car heist in U.S. history.
Thank you so much. Y'all I'm so proud of it. Them. Yeah, we did.
Well, after confirming his real identity, the custom agents turned over Phil Johnson to the FBI. The G-men held him on charges of armed robbery, as well as kidnapping, interstate flight to avoid prosecution. And now he was surrounded by law enforcement agents.
He just racked him up.
Which, ironically, was where he always wanted to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? He made it.
He's all, hey,
look
colleagues.
At you. After questioning, the FBI learned that Johnson used the birth certificate of a former roommate to get a driver's license in the name of Roger Lauder. Same for his other fake IDs. Now, at the time of his arrest, he had $10,714 on him in cash.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly another $65,000 that he'd deposited in 8 different Mexican banks.
Mm-hmm.
After 5 months on the lam, Phil Johnson had spent how much of the money?
He's got less than 100 grand mm-hmm. that accounted for at this point.
Totally.
Out of 18.8 mil.
$186,000.
That's
all he spent in over 5 months when he's got this big score. He
wow.
clearly was not in it for the money.
No.
The rest of the stolen 18.8 million was located in a storage facility in the town of Mountain Home, North Carolina.
Wow.
So just some random just storage facility sitting there, 18.8 million.
And what if it had gone, what if he hadn't paid for the facility and then
someone else
bids
would get it for like
it?
$4,000. Yep. That's always yeah. my goal in life. You talk about winning the lottery. I want to buy a storage unit that has like
18 million cash.
Is part of a major crime. And then I yeah. get all the cash and I don't tell anybody.
That'd be
You're
perfect.
Just like, what happened? Oh, he bought a storage unit and retired.
Yeah. And he just pays cash for everything.
Yeah. So from Canada. So as you might guess, Mr. House of Pain, he was mm-hmm. unfriendly when he was arrested. He was called belligerent. He refused to cooperate.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He was still kind of rumpled and grouchy. Yeah. But however, eventually his better instincts kicked in. He pleaded guilty to charges of interfering with interstate commerce, money laundering, kidnapping, all the charges they threw at him. He was eventually tried, convicted, and sentenced to 25 years in prison.
Mm.
In Colorado, then that's where he was first incarcerated. Then he mm-hmm. later was transferred to a federal facility in California. And in 2020, Elizabeth,
yeah.
after serving out 22 years of his full 25-year sentence,
That's
Phil Johnson
lot.
Was released from prison. Yeah, not much time off for good
People
behavior.
People usually don't get the full ticket.
Yeah, I don't know what he was doing on the inside. But
grumpy.
He wasn't
grumpy.
Making friends.
They're like, you're a
little
grumpy.
Still grouchy, yeah. What can you do? The lawyer who'd represented him in his trial was a man named Tom Cushman, a local Jacksonville lawyer. He attempted in the newspapers to sum up his former client and why he did what he did. And Cushman said, and I quote, I sincerely believe that he sincerely believed in what he was doing as a labor protest. Can I just say that I love that? If that actually was true, I'd love that.
I sincerely believe he sincerely.
Totally. Now, Cushman, the lawyer, he also offered that, I always liked Philip. He was quiet, but he was very intense. Philip was very bright. He did not let on that he thought deeply or that he was very bright, but clearly he was. So there you go.
He didn't let on.
Yeah,
he
couldn't tell looking him in the eye,
he
but there
kept
was
that
something.
A big secret.
His light was under a couple bushels. So at this point, Philip Johnson, he could be in his, he'd be about 60 years old, I think.
Yeah.
His former lawyer has no idea where to find him. He is free. He's somewhere out there in the world. So
oh, wow.
Philip Johnson, if you're listening, good on you, brother.
Yeah, give us a ring.
He says no one knows where to find him, but I bet his sister Sharon knows where to find him.
Yeah,
that's
probably,
just my guess. But
probably.
When the counselor was asked where his former client might be, these days, Cushman said, and I quote, I would think that he would be doing something very low-key, avoiding publicity and all, although it seemed to me that he had a good story to tell. Now, Philip Johnson, if you happen to hear this, two things.
Get a book agent.
Yes, exactly. Congrats from us, number one, on pulling off your heist and having an exit plan. Like,
yeah.
we are so happy
yeah.
to hear
and
that.
And no one really got hurt.
No one got hurt. And also, well done on all of that around the way, right?
Yeah.
You know, getting your revenge, you know.
Oh, yeah, love it.
You know,
I'm loving that for him.
Attacking and dethroning God, whatever it is you're
Everything.
Trying to do, way to go, right? But also, number two, as Elizabeth points out, get yourself a book agent because, my man, you need to write a book. You are now a qualified author.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You've been in prison.
He's done the time. It would be a fascinating book.
I think so. I do. Like, I'm with all the people close to him. I'd like to believe that he's just somebody who got twisted by life,
well,
and that's what makes him the bitter.
And I want to know more about
I think he was
that.
A kind heart kid.
Yeah, I want to know more about that. So get a literary agent, dude.
Get on it. Get a typing.
Add to our ridiculous crime library.
Yeah, paper's cheap and typewriters are still out there.
That's right.
So, hey, what's our ridiculous takeaway from here, Elizabeth?
Oh, boy. That is one way to protest labor.
Quite the labor protest, right?
I like
right?
that.
If that is true, I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think it's true?
No.
Yeah.
No. And I don't think it was like a big revenge thing. I think he was just thinking like, I could do this. Mm-hmm. I'm bored out of my skull.
I think he was definitely mad.
I think he sits there all day long and then thought about how he would go about doing this and then realizing how easy it could be. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think he was mad at him and he thought, here's my two fingers, I'm out of here.
You know what my ridiculous takeaway is?
No.
Thanks for asking.
No.
Martin Luther King once said that the riot is the voice of the unheard. Right? Uh-huh. I think his heist was the voice of the neglected.
Oh, that's good. I like that. That's my takeaway too.
You taking that one?
Yeah.
Dave, you want in on this? This could be yours too.
You want this one too?
I'll take it.
Okay, cool.
There
cool.
We go. Nice. Well, hey, while you're on the mic, hey, we're in the mood for a talkback. How's that sound for you?
Talkback. Oh my God, did he just say that?
OMG.
Hey guys, just an idea inspired by EVP. What if the two of you played Two Truths and a Lie, where you each describe three crimes and the other one has to figure out which crime was the lie?
That sounds fun.
That's a good one.
Yeah, do you want to do that?
Yeah, we should totally do that. That'll be a good episode. Like, yeah, we'll get Dave in on this too.
Yeah.
I like
I'm into this.
Thank you so
good
much,
call.
Talkbacker.
Yeah.
Talkerbacker.
Give it up. Well, as always, you can find us online, Ridiculous Crime, Twitter, Instagram, so forth and so on. We have the website that we do love, ridiculouscrime.com. Check it out. Also, we love your talkbacks. So hit up the iHeart app, download it, do what you got to, record it, and may hear yourself on the air. Also, email us if you like. We love the stories, ridiculouscrime@gmail.com. Start it here, Elizabeth. And that's all we got for you. Once again, we'll catch you next time. Ridiculous Crime is hosted by Elizabeth Dutton and Zarin Burnett. Produced and edited by the mayor of Jacksonville, Florida, Dave Kustin. Research is by Florida's most feared fact-checkers and researchers, Marissa Brown and Andrea Song Charpentier. Our theme song is by Thomas Alleged Lee and Travis, yeah, that's the ticket, Dutton. The host's wardrobe provided by Botany 500. Executive producers are Ben, 21 cubic feet of cash, Bolin, and Noel, I brought snacks. Brown.
Ridiculous Crime.
Say it one more time.
Ridiculous Crime.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
people that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in exactly. to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which right. is different than empathy, yeah. right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.